Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it. Believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call, did write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of a pro-lie president to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm your other host, Mark. A logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments. The logical fallacy we're looking at this week is lying with statistics, also known as the statistical fallacy and the fallacy of curve fitting.
So the statistical fallacy, or lying with statistics, actually kind of covers a couple of different types of using numbers to tell lies or to misinform people. And it also crosses over with quite a few other logical fallacies, like cherry picking and causation versus correlation, things we've talked about before.
Yeah.
But what we're specifically talking about in our first example is using specific numbers to make it seem like you know a lot more about what you're talking about.
That's kind of because, Trump, one of us, a proper Trumpism, isn't it? To find a really specific thing to make it look like he knows what he's talking about. Yeah,
it really is. And it makes it seem like if you're being specific, you must have some kind of information. You must have a source that's given you that information, and therefore you probably know what you're talking about. It gives that impression.
Yeah.
But it's not always the case. So, on the 27th of January this year, Trump tweeted, "We are not even into February, and the cost of illegal immigration so far this year is $18,959,495,168. Cost Friday was $603,331,392. There are at least 25,772,342 illegal aliens, not the 11 million that has been reported for years in our country. So ridiculous. DHS."
What's DHS?
Now, that DHS at the end there is presumably intended to imply that these figures come from the Department of Homeland Security.
Okay. Not some dumb hick statistic.
Yeah. The weird thing is the only figure there that comes from the DHS is that 11 million figure.
Okay. Reported for years. Yeah.
Yeah. Which actually in December of last year they said was probably closer to 12 million. That's about how many they think illegal aliens are in the US.
But from
not
when?
25.7 million.
No. No. But when is the 11 million from? Like since the
40s? That's from 2015. Since... reckoned it was 11 million in 2015, and it had probably gone up a bit since then, basically. So it wasn't anywhere near the peak, which was somewhere in 2008, 2009.
Okay. Yeah.
So those numbers still are really specific.
Yeah.
Way
Where
out.
Where do they come from?
From most people's estimates. A lot of people immediately after that were saying, well, these are just made up. We don't have any clue. These don't tally with any statistics that we've heard about.
Yeah.
And certainly if you look at any of the kind of official statistics, the Center for Immigrant Studies and Immigration Studies and things like that, they are way off.
Yeah.
So someone found where they actually came from, and typical to Trump, it's because he was watching a right-wing cable channel.
Oh no. So did he must have written it. Did he write it down?
I mean, he must have done.
Yeah. You can't remember a number that specific without actually sitting there and writing it down.
There's a cable channel called One America News Network, and they had a graphic showing the cost, it says, of illegal immigration. And it has that $18 billion figure of the total cost this year. It does have the 25,770,000 figure of illegal immigrants, but it doesn't say illegal immigrants. It says total aliens in USA. So that means all foreign people,
Not
illegals.
Right. Yeah.
So Trump got this figure and then got the figure wrong. What it was referring to wrong.
So actually that includes many of the casts from Men in Black. those kind of aliens, and Michael Jackson, and etc. Yeah,
Dennis Rodman, definitely.
So
the figures that he quoted there,
yeah,
is still. I mean, even if you look at that, the on the One American News Network, it says that their estimates for those on a little kind of asterisk at the bottom of the screen.
Okay.
Says they're provided by the Center for Immigration Studies, the Department for Homeland Security, Federation for Immigration Reform, and the Institute for Defense Analyses.
Yeah.
None of those organizations provide figures that are similar to this. So it's still not clear where the One American News Network got that. They seem to have maybe done some maths on some figures that they got and just added stuff together.
And not shown they're working out like you're supposed to. They've broken the cardinal rule, haven't they, of saying, well, this is where we got that figure. And then just
they wouldn't get all of the marks in their maths exam, definitely.
No. And it's convincingly specific, isn't it? Because there's kind of, you know, the 392 at the end. You expect the cost to actually have 75 cents as well.
Absolutely.
You know.
And when you are trying to work out the cost of illegal migration or immigration, that's massively disputed as well.
Yeah.
So you can't, he's literally got it down to the dollar. I'm surprised it didn't go down to cents.
But, exactly. Yeah.
But depending on who you ask, nobody really knows that. that's bizarre. Yeah. But he has suggested an amount in the region of $220 to $250 billion a year that it costs, that illegal immigration costs. That's unclear where that came from.
Yeah.
But if you kind of divide that by the number of months or the number of days up to that point, it's roughly that $18 billion. Figure, but that's way above even the most high estimates of how much illegal immigration costs. The Federation for American Immigration Reform, which is considered a high estimate, their estimate is $135 billion per year. Which for total illegal immigration, which doesn't take into account any of the money that illegal immigrants put into the system, because many of them pay social security, for example, but don't take any medical out of that or anything like that. So but if you ask someone like the Cato Institute, which is probably more left-leaning, favors immigration, they reckon the total cost per year is 3.3 to 15.6 billion, which is significantly lower, by a factor of about 20 times compared to Trump's figure.
And I guess that's what that illustrates actually is the use of statistics to shore up one's political position. So if you hold an anti-immigration position, you're going to find the statistics that, you know, in Trump's case, these ones from some obscure right-wing-ish channel, they just coincide with his belief. It is the cognitive bias. He goes, oh, yeah, well, I'll buy into that. Whereas the pro-immigration side of it would say, well, no, it doesn't cost that much because it might be that they think that their number is as true as the right wing people think their number is true. So
if you do look at the figures from the Federation for American Immigration Reform or the Cato Institute, they do show they're working. They do actually say that this is why we think this, that, you know, there's this number of immigrants. Is the amount that the US spends per immigrant and so on. So it's not as simple as plucking a number out of the air, looks like what Trump did here.
As we said time and time again, just because you're the president doesn't make what you say right. Yeah.
So another way that you can use statistics to mislead people is to just take something out of context and not present it with all the information that would be needed to understand everything. Right. And one thing that Trump mentioned during the State of the Union this week was this.
All Americans can be proud that we have more women in the workforce than ever before.
Now, that is true.
Yeah.
That is a true statement. There are more women in the workforce than ever before. there's also more people than ever before because the population is constantly growing.
Yeah.
So it's not really surprising that pretty much every year there's more women in the workforce than ever before.
Yeah.
As a percentage of the women of working age, it's not currently the highest it's ever been. So that's really the kind of implication there is that more women of all the women who could possibly be working are working. And that's called the labour participation rate. And that currently is about 57.5%, which in that was highest in 2000. Just above 60% in 2000.
What he seems to be implying is also is that it's because of him.
Yeah.
Or because of the policies that he has put in place that this is happening, and that it isn't just happening because there are more people. Not least in some part due to the number of immigrants coming into the country.
Yes.
It's not all just about Americans being born and, you know, reaching their maturity and going into the workplace. There are people coming in fully as adults and joining the workforce. And then didn't he also add, because they all, everyone stood up and clapped, and many of the women in white also stood up. And then he said, you know, stay on your feet because you're like this. And then he said, you know, more women in Congress than ever before. Yeah. And the implication is that, again, that's because of him. Well, in a way, it is.
Yeah. That's the but one not... he can take credit for.
But in a kind of...
not in a way he'd like to.
No, what's the equivalent? What's the opposite of a backhanded insult? It's a kind of a. It's, you know, he's taking the credit.
It's a cell phone, I think.
Yeah, that was the funniest bit.
So finally, another State of the Union moment was a thing that Trump said a number of times before, and he said this:
1 in 3 women is sexually assaulted on the long journey north.
So this is part of his whole fear-mongering about immigration thing, which he loves to do. And this statistic is from a 2017 report by Doctors Without Borders, which sounds reasonable. They're a recognised organisation. They're probably trustworthy. To be fair to Trump, he probably doesn't know why this is a statistic that probably shouldn't be quoted with a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
But the reason it shouldn't be quoted with confidence is that this was not based on a study of all women who were emigrating into the US through the southern border or moving through Mexico or anything like that. This was a survey of 500-ish people, 400 and some people, who were treated by Doctors Without Borders.
Right.
So obviously that's going to skew people who have medical needs rather than... people who don't. But more than that, only 12% of the people studied were women.
So
this is actually a study that is, or a report that's based on the experiences of 56 women.
out of whom 20 odd were.
Yeah, 31.4%, which I think is about 18 women.
Okay.
Said that they were sexually abused on the journey, not sexually assaulted, which is maybe slightly different.
Yeah. So it's an argument from small numbers, in effect.
It really is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just very
extrapolating
dodgy.
It up to the 25 million. He's implying that that 25 million illegal aliens, 1 in 3 of the women were assaulted. Yeah.
It's very dodgy to suggest that make that leap.
Yeah, I suspect, you know, actually that he's personally assaulted more women than that in the long journey north from Mar-a-Lago to Washington.
For legal reasons, can't confirm that. But
he hasn't denied it. I don't think anybody denied it.
That's
so
true.
Based on our last broadcast, as Marsh said, we could just do these undisputed truths.
Say what we like.
Yeah, say what we like. Yeah. If he doesn't dispute it by his own token, then therefore is true.
Yeah.
So we're
now there's
right.
another statistic that sometimes gets bandied around in the same vein as that one.
Yeah.
And it's not something I think that Trump has said, but it's something that comes up in the same kinds of discussions. And it's It's supposedly from Amnesty International.
Okay.
And it says that 60% of migrant women and girls are raped while migrating.
Wow.
Which is way bigger than one in three.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to go through all of the detail of how this is wrong.
Yeah.
But the Washington Post did an amazing fact check of this.
Right.
And it led down through many layers of fact-checking to the original source appearing to be from a book from 1998, which says that a study of migrants estimates that 60% of the illegal female migrants have some sort of sexual experience in their trip toward the US, from rape right. or coerced sexual relations to a lover.
Okay.
So some of them had a boyfriend.
Yeah, so it's on a spectrum of...
Yeah, but that's not rape.
Some of them
might have been raped, but yeah, that includes all of the people who had any kind of sexual experience on the trip.
Yeah.
People should look at this Washington Post article, because it is really impressive, the amount of detail that they went into to figure out where this number came from.
Yeah.
And they're calling themselves out as well, because they've used this figure before.
Ah.
And they explain why they originally thought it was from Amnesty International and where they got it and so on and so on. And excitingly, this is going to go in our show notes for this episode,
Yay.
Which is the first time we've had show notes because now we have a website.
Well,
so
hey.
If you go to fallacioustrump.com/FT19, you'll see the page for this episode with the show notes, and you will be able to click on that article and read all about how the Washington Post found out about that. And you can do all kinds of other cool things, like find out about Mark and me and contact us various ways. There's even a little tool to leave us a voicemail message. So,
yay! And do it in your best Trump voice.
And now is the time, I think, for Mark's British Politics Corner.
Or do it in your best Boris voice. So I'm going to take us back to the heady days of 2018, when it's about a year ago, actually, 24th January, Prime Minister's Question Time, before they had they were bothering with things like Brexit. I mean, you know, it's a year to go, for heaven's sake, they weren't doing anything. So this is in reply to a question from Jeremy Corbyn about the funding of the NHS, and he's pointing out several figures of the fact that the money isn't being spent where the Tories are saying it's being spent. And in response to that particular question, Theresa May says this.
If he wants to talk about figures about targets being missed... Yes, the latest figures show that in England, 497 people were waiting more than 12 hours. But the latest figures also show that under the Labour government in Wales, 3,741 people were waiting more than 12 hours.
Yeah, so there we have Theresa May doing the lying with statistics. I like the fact that this one, it doesn't kind of pretend to be a fallacy. It doesn't sort of hide behind anything. It just says lying with statistics. You're telling great big lies. And what she's doing actually is a false equivalence. So she's stating that the latest figures show that in England, 497 people were waiting more than 12 hours. But the latest figures also show that under the Labour government in Wales, 3,741 people were waiting more than 12 hours. It's not a valid comparison. So the Minister of Wales wrote to the chair of the UK Statistics Authority and says it's not a valid comparison because in England they refer to they're based on those patients who've waited more than 12 hours from a decision to admit to admission to a ward. So that's once they've gone through triage, they've been, you know, swept up out of the waiting area and they've worked out what to do with them. And then they've said, okay, what we've got to do now is keep you in. So we'll admit you to a ward. So from that moment where they say, we're going to admit you to a ward, only 497 had to wait more than 12 hours. So it could be that the place was busy or they were in late at night and the wards were full of people sleeping, waiting to be discharged following day and those kinds of issues. In Wales, the time is measured from the total time spent in accident and emergency departments. So from the moment that Welsh people turn up in A&E, that's when the clock starts. So they are then the time waiting to go into triage, to be assessed, to be treated there and then to be assigned a place. So because you're starting the clock earlier, of course you're going to get that many more people.
Yeah, absolutely. Through that, from experience, the wait you can have in just in the waiting room, waiting to be seen by anyone at all, or practically be acknowledged that you're even there, can be hours and hours. So, that's really going to have a huge difference.
So Carwyn Jones, the first minister of the National Assembly of Wales, basically the Prime Minister of Wales. So Wales is, for our non-UK listeners, is a devolved parliament. So it has its own assembly. It's called the Welsh Assembly, that looks after the local politics of Wales in much the same way as the London-based government looks after England. But it's not quite like that, because the irony is that the central government funds the NHS in Wales. So there's the Prime Minister using the statistics in error in order to have a go at Corbyn, to say that the Welsh government, which is a Labour government, the waiting times are massively huge compared with the waiting times in England. And if they are... And you're equating that to poor funding decisions. You, Theresa May, are the Prime Minister in charge of funding the NHS in Wales. So, So the First Minister wrote to the UK Statistics Authority, and the Statistics Authority upheld his complaint. And he's saying, yeah, you're right to say the comparison is not valid. And the waiting times between UK countries are difficult for a variety of reasons, including differences in data collection and health service structure, the use of walk-in centres and so forth. So David Norgrove, who's the chair of the UK Statistics Authority, says it's clearly important to be able to compare health and social care service performance across the UK, particularly to learn lessons from different ways of doing things. And fundamentally, he's kind of saying, if you don't measure it right, you can't have those kind of meaningful discussions. So what Theresa May is doing in answering that question in that way is doing what Trump's doing, which is to grab hold of the statistics, slap them in the face of the opposition, and then sit down and go, job done. She's not showing any of the workings out, and consequently making it very difficult to have a grown-up talk about the health provisions, just in the same way that Trump is preventing the possibility of having a grown-up talk about immigration.
Yeah, one of the difficult things with this fallacy is that in terms of arguing against it, basically, is that it's easy to present a statistic, especially if you don't really care whether it's true or how accurate
it is.
It's really easy to do that. It's much harder to know all possible statistics off the top of your head so that you're ready to debunk that.
Yeah.
So when someone throws one at you, usually people can't just say, well, that's not true and here's why. Usually people have to say, okay, I'll have to go away and look that up. So you can't. It's hard to immediately fight back and explain why someone is using that statistic wrongly, unless you happen to know it by heart.
And I guess that's why it works as a compelling argument. And it's difficult in the moment to call someone up and say, "Yeah, wait a minute, you're wrong." So you can kind of win the argument just by the fact that you're trotting out those numbers. And it seems to be the more convincing statistics include very detailed numbers right down to the last figure. So the Theresa May, you know, went down to, sorry, it was 7,000 something, something and one. It wasn't rounded up or anything. It sounded convincing. That's the thing about statistics, isn't it? You've got to have like a seven or a two or a one at the end, but not round it up or round it down. And then that way it doesn't sound like a statistic. It, you know, it doesn't sound like an average. It sounds like the real thing. Which is why pi is such a compelling number, I guess.
No need to run and hide. It's a fallacy in the wild. No need to laugh and cry. It's a fallacy.
There we go, Black there with the amazing 80s synth pop classic, Fallacy in the Wild. Yeah.
Excellent.
I've realised actually my I really like 80s stuff and that my my singing range suits that kind of pompous.
So we're going to have to, we're going to have a run of 80s ones now.
I think so, yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. Okay. So in the Fallacy in the Wild, we like to look at the fallacy of the week from a non-political perspective. And our first example is kind of fake political. So it's from the absolutely brilliant and genius British sitcom Yes Minister. And in this scene, Sir Humphrey is explaining to Bernard how polling companies massage their statistics sometimes.
Party have had an opinion poll done. It seems all the voters are in favour of bringing back national service.
Well, I have another opinion poll done showing the voters are against bringing back national service.
We can't be for it and
against. Of course they can, Bernard. Have you ever been surveyed?
Yes. Well, not me, actually. My house. Oh, I see what you
mean. Well, Bernard, you know what happens. Nice young lady comes up to you. Obviously, you want to create a good impression. You don't want to look a fool, do you?
No.
No. So she starts asking you some questions. Mr. Woolley. Are you worried about the number of young people without jobs?
Yes.
Are you worried about the rise in crime among teenagers?
Yes.
Do you think there's a lack of discipline in our comprehensive schools?
Yes.
Do you think young people welcome some authority and leadership in their lives?
Yes.
Do you think they respond to a challenge?
Yes.
Would you be in favour of reintroducing national service? Yes.
Oh, well, I suppose I might.
Yes or no?
Yes.
Of course you would, Bernard. After all you've told you, you can't say no to that. So, they don't mention the first five questions and they publish the last one.
Is that really what they do?
Well, not the reputable ones, no, but there aren't many of those. So, alternatively, the young lady can get the opposite result.
How?
Mr. Woolley, are you worried about the danger of war?
Yes.
Are you worried about the growth of armaments?
Yes.
Do you think there's a danger in giving young people guns and teaching them how to kill?
Yes.
Do you think it's wrong to force people to take up arms against their will?
Yes.
Would you oppose the reintroduction of national service?
Yes.
Sir Humphrey there perfectly illustrates how asking the right questions can get the answer that you're looking for.
Yeah.
And so that is a danger when looking at statistics.
Yeah, because you can take away all the other questions and you just publish the result for that one.
And yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Our second example in The Fallacy in the Wild is from The Simpsons in an episode where Homer has become a vigilante. And in his gang, he has Jimbo, one of the school bullies, whose special skill is beating people with a sack of doorknobs. So, and Homer gets interviewed on the local news.
Mr. Simpson, how do you respond to the charge that petty vandalism, such as graffiti, is down 80%? While heavy sack beatings are up a shocking 900%.
Oh, people can come up with statistics to prove anything, Kent. 40% of all people know that.
heavy sack beatings are up 900%. Yeah, I love that. 40% of people know that. That reminds me of there's a British comedian, Vic Reeves, who once said 88.2% of statistics are made up on the spot, which is a kind of update of Benjamin Disraeli apparently was attributed to saying that by Mark Twain, amongst others, being three kinds of lies: lies, damned lies, and statistics.
So we're gonna play
fake news, folks. I love the game. It's a great game.
I understand the game as well as anybody.
Yeah, it's the time for fake news, the game in which I read out three Trump quotes, two of which are real and one I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news. And
yeah,
we are on the cusp of greatness here, because
yes,
if you get this
absolutely
one right, you are up to the level of random chance.
Yeah. Yeah, that whole kind of the position of just going, well, yeah, I'm just winning this. You know, I'm the best at getting it right two in a row ever.
Yeah, two in a row. So yeah, this would be a record-breaking run
it
if
would,
you did manage
yes,
to get this
exactly.
Right.
It would.
The theme this week is intelligence.
Okay.
And
because
Trump has been talking this week and last week about how his intelligence people, basically, they're just wrong about Iran and Russia and North Korea.
Yeah.
And although they literally disagreed with him in televised public speaking, he said that they were misquoted and that they all actually agreed with him.
Yeah.
So, So, statement number one. I've listened to these intelligence people go on and on, and quite frankly, it's a waste of time. I can do my job without any intelligence whatsoever.
Yeah.
Or number two, my intelligence people, if they said in fact that Iran is a wonderful kindergarten, I disagree with them 100%. It's a vicious country that kills many people.
Mm-hmm.
Or number three, this time he's talking about the allegation that basically all of the intelligence agencies agree that Russia was involved in influencing the election.
Yeah.
He says, I heard it was 17 agencies. I said, boy, that's a lot. Do we even have that many intelligence agencies? Let's check it. And we did some very heavy research. It turned out to be three or four.
Right. Surely you'd know exactly how many it turned out if they did heavy research. Yeah, that's one of his usual, I'm going to sound convincing by giving you a number. Mainly a prime number. Okay, so I love that. If only he knew that actually he's a stand-up comic, then that would be perfect, because it's the setup is, you know, I don't have to sit here listening to you insult me. I can have that at home. It's, you know, I've listened to these intelligent people go on and on. Quite frankly, it's a waste of time. I can do my job without intelligence whatsoever. It's a brilliant gag. But he just doesn't know that he does that. My intelligent people, if they said in fact that Iran is a wonderful kid, I disagree with them 100%. So I think number two is probably true, because that's the basis of his disagreement, isn't it? That he has this gut feeling about stuff. It's a vicious country that kills many people, not unlike the US. I heard it was 17 agencies. I said, boy, that's a lot. Do we even have that many? And then we turned out to be three or four. Okay, that's got having learned from last week where Marsh said, yeah, the three or four thing kind of is right. And then he was wrong. Ha ha. Okay. See, the first one, I really want him to have said that. Okay, I think number three is the one that you made up.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you think number two is real?
Yeah.
About the kindergarten?
Yeah.
And number two is real.
My intelligence people, if they said, in fact, that Iran is a wonderful kindergarten, I disagree with them 100%. It is a vicious country that kills many people.
But he's setting them up. He's doing a straw man there, isn't he?
Yeah,
because he's
haven't said it's a wonderful kindergarten.
No, and if they said Iran is a place where you can get donuts and cushions, I would disagree with them. Well, they haven't. You know, he kind of does it with that if. He puts the if in which is plausible deniability, and then comes up with a straw man, and then says, well, I disagree.
Yeah, the extent, basically, of what they've said about Iran, pretty much, is that they appear to be complying with the nuclear treaty, which he pulled out of. So That's it. They're not currently a threat.
Yeah. And he's determined to go to war with them because he just wants to. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, there you go. Right. So okay. Yeah.
You think number one is real? is fake news.
Oh, it was mainly because I really wanted to. It's a very good joke.
It is good. And actually, I can't take credit for that joke. Oh. That is a quote that has been attributed to Trump by people on Twitter, a lot of whom have believed it. But it's actually from a piece in The New Yorker by Andy Borowitz. I've slightly adapted it, but basically the frame of it is by a satirist, so that's why it's a good setup and a good joke. And it does sound like the kind of thing he'd say, which is why a lot of people unwittingly thought it was true.
Exactly. No, well, there you go. It's a fake Trump quote. Yeah, nice, very nice.
So, which means that number three is real. Here it is.
I heard it was 17 agencies. I said, boy, that's a lot. Do we even have that many intelligence agencies, right? Let's check it. And we did some very heavy research. It turned out to be 3 or 4.
So he's kind of...
How much research do you need to do to find out how many intelligence
heavy. You need to do a lot of heavy research. It involves numbers going all the way up to 17. He's done the distracting thing where he's just going, and I'm just taking away the validity of their point by saying there aren't 17 of them that agree, there are only 3 or 4. So, I should have...
Now, just to give this some context.
Okay, yeah.
He heard there were 17 agencies who thought that Russia interfered with the election because there are 17 intelligence agencies.
Okay.
And they're all under the aegis of the Director of National Intelligence, basically. Yep. He's kind of in charge of all of them.
Yeah.
The point is that all of them confirmed that this had gone on.
Yeah.
But not based on their own intelligence.
Yeah.
So they kind of looked at the intelligence that had been gathered by 3 or 4, as Trump says.
Oh, okay.
But those 3 or 4 were the CIA, the FBI, and the National Security Agency.
Which are
pretty important intelligence agencies.
So what the other ones have done is just doing the triangulation to check the veracity of their findings.
Yeah, and the other agencies are not related to this, so they wouldn't be looking into it on their own. They're places like the Air Force Intelligence and Army Intelligence and the Treasury Department and the DEA, for example. So they wouldn't be investigating this.
Yeah.
But they have confirmed the intelligence that was gathered by the FBI, the CIA, and the NSA, which points very strongly to Russia interfering with the election. So... he's not completely wrong in saying it wasn't 17 who said it.
No.
But he's trying to use that to dismiss the all of the ones who would be involved in investigating this saying they did it.
Yeah.
So what that means is, unfortunately, your amazing run has been broken.
Oh, no. And it also means that Trump's still in the White House.
It does mean that. Unfortunately, And so you're currently at 29%.
Hey, that's right. That's good.
Yeah.
Well, that statistically means I'm winning.
Yeah. If you use Trump statistics, sure.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
So, podcast listeners, I need your help to fool Mark. If you think you can make up a convincing fake Trump quote, then share this episode on Twitter, include your quote and the hashtag Fallacious Trump. I'll pick the best one and you'll be podcast famous. And this is the part of the episode that this week, at least, is called The State of the Union is Not a Logical Fallacy. Because we need to talk about the State of the Union.
The Union,
It was, I mean, to be honest, there's way too much to talk about. So we're not even going to get to a lot of the stuff that went on and that Trump talked about, because he talked about a lot of shit. But and it went on, actually. It went on nearly an hour and a half.
Good God.
Is really long and
yeah,
kind of boring.
Kind of boring.
Yeah.
And mostly, is that mostly because he was kind of on script?
Did he stick to the script?
Yeah.
He did the odd ad lib,
yeah.
But he pretty much stuck to the script. I mean, the script itself obviously had some issues, but
yeah, just basically, it was yet another campaign speech.
Yeah, it was basically a rally.
Yeah,
And people were giving standing ovations to basically anything that he said. Mm. Anytime he paused for breath, the Republicans were standing up and clapping, and that at various points were chanting USA, 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 which, I mean, I'm surprised they didn't start chanting lock her up at various points.
Yeah, but, exactly.
It was very rally-ish in places. So, I mean, among the things he tried to take credit for was this.
And now, for the first time in 65 years, we are a net exporter of energy.
Now, that is a true fact. Provided you assume now means since 2015 under Obama.
Because
that's when the US became a net exporter of energy, and it has remained the same ever since. Nothing to do with Trump at all.
Okay. So he's right. Okay. So he's just traveled back in time to 2015.
In 2015.
For the first time in 65 years. Yeah. Not now for the first time in 65. Yeah.
But at least that was a true thing that he said.
Yeah.
You know, it is accurate that the US is a net exporter. This one, it was just made up.
The border city of El Paso, Texas, used to have extremely high rates of violent crime. One of the highest in the entire country, and considered one of our nation's most dangerous cities. Now, immediately upon its building, with a powerful barrier in place, El Paso is one of the safest cities in our country. Simply put, walls work and walls save lives.
So that kind of suggests that there used to be a problem in El Paso.
Yeah.
Trump built a wall. Now there isn't a problem. Right?
Yeah. 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 I'll buy that. But
in terms of violent crimes, it has been for years and years, like the third least violent city above a certain size, like above 500,000 inhabitants.
Yeah.
In the US, the border fence that was authorized in the area of El Paso, which was authorized by Bush in 2006, went up in kind of 2008-2009.
Right.
Nothing to do with Trump, obviously.
No.
and the violent crime rate between 2006 and 2011, so 2 years either side of the border, the wall being built, the fence being built, actually increased by 17% in El Paso.
Oh.
The fence had absolutely nothing to do with the violent crime rate in that city. It didn't go down. It still isn't high.
Yeah.
It's just completely made up. There's no part of that sentence that is true.
Well, it's bizarre. What does he think he's get? Does he think that nobody can check this stuff?
I think not only that, but he doesn't realize or doesn't care that there were literally five or six major news organizations fact-checking it as they were.
As he was saying it.
He was saying it, and things were going up on screen saying, this isn't true.
Yeah.
It's just, it's crazy. It is. I don't understand that at all. But the trouble here is that this doesn't just debunk what he said.
Mm.
It really damages his argument, because if you have to lie to make your point, if you have to completely blatantly make up facts to make your point, presumably in one of the, you know, the most important speeches you give in the entire year, the people doing the research couldn't find a place where the facts supported the argument.
Yeah.
Because if they did, they would have used that instead, surely.
Yeah. So
making up something about a well-known city that you can look up the statistics for.
Yeah, exactly. Because if there were true things, they would have used those. So the thing is, he's going to have to get this legislation passed, the kind of people, the Democrats, the kind of people who are going to be checking the truth of what he's saying. So it's pointless to even entertain the idea of making something up, because the very people in the Congress who are going to be listening to the arguments and then voting on them are going to know that your argument is completely baseless and just go, yeah, well, no, you just made that up. So, no, we're not going to give you $5 billion for the wall. If only the same were happening about Brexit. Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah. It's just not true. Just give it up.
So another thing he kind of made up.
Yeah.
But more, I suppose in this case, it was about expressing the right-wing outrage that has been going on about this, was about the governor of Virginia, Ralph Northam, and the statements that he made about medical care for babies that were non-viable. He made a statement on a radio show about this.
Right.
And then we had the case of the governor of Virginia where he stated he would execute a baby after birth.
So Ralph Northam has a lot of difficulties at the moment.
Yeah.
But he did not say he would execute a baby after birth.
No.
It's so bizarre. I mean, this is a current right-wing talking point saying that what Northam was saying on this radio show was that that after birth,
yeah,
the parent and the doctors will just decide whether or not to kill the baby. It's right. So bizarre because he didn't word it very well what he said, because the conversation was about late term abortions at first.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
then he was talking in his answer about babies with severe deformities,
yeah,
and fetuses that are non-viable.
Yeah.
So these are babies that will not survive on their own.
Yeah.
And what he said was, if a mother's in labour, the infant would be delivered, the infant would be kept comfortable, the infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired, and then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not saying they'll make sure the baby's all right, and then when it's all right, they'll decide whether or not to kill it.
Kill it, yeah.
they're saying if it's possible even to keep it alive for a little bit, and they decide that that's not incredibly cruel to this deformed baby,
yeah,
they'll try and keep it alive and then decide, you know, what to do next. Whether to withdraw care,
yeah,
because that's actually probably the kindest thing,
yeah,
in some cases. And for many babies, unfortunately, that is necessary, that they will not survive, and you have to make that call. And that's not infanticide. That's the same as deciding whether your relative who has been in a car accident needs to be taken off life support.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to live.
They can't survive on their own. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, it's a progression from the one that we talked about before, where Trump says not only is there legislation that would allow a baby to be ripped from the mother's womb moments before birth. Well, no, yeah, that is birth.
That is, yes, that is delivering a
that's
baby.
That's actually birth. Not sure about the ripping, but, you know, maybe if you're delivered by Von Tooze, that might involve some, there might be a little bit of tearing that goes on. But so it's just to ramp it up, because he couldn't get away with that bit. And that's not true either, because that's all about 24 weeks rather than 37,
yeah,
at, you know, at full term. And you get, well, you know, it's just kind of late ones. It's post 21 weeks. So yeah, it isn't
an even
out
then,
moment
it's,
before
it's
birth.
It's only in cases of non-viable fetuses or danger to the health of,
yep,
the mother.
Yeah.
And even in states where they do prohibit abortion past a certain time, you know, in any case, it like a blanket ban.
Yeah.
That still doesn't prevent doctors from saving a mother's life by terminating the pregnancy. Mm. That,
yeah,
doesn't stop that from happening, because if the mother's life is in jeopardy, her rights become important too.
So yes, exactly. Yeah, which bit of the life is it about? And it's just ushering in the right-wing religious Republicans vote. You know, it's that if anyone needs to appeal to his base, let's face it, it is Trump. So that's what he's doing. He's kind of getting them on board again in order preparing him to go for the second term, to go full term. Ha ha.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So finally, he said, I mean, among many other things that we just don't have time for, he said a quite amazing thing about North Korea.
Yeah.
If I had not been elected president of the United States, we would right now, in my opinion, be in a major war with North Korea.
Well, in your opinion, but the thing is, because you were elected president of the United States, the very possibility of war with Korea came about.
Yeah, whereas that's the only reason it was an issue.
Yeah.
Was because he was pissing off Kim Jong-un.
Yeah. You're calling him Rocket Man and Fat Boy or whatever. Yeah. And then saying, oh, no, we're great friends, and then insulting him. And you get, what? But people... Because he
also being just completely fooled by him in every possible way.
Yeah, yeah.
Coming back and saying, "Oh yeah, we signed an agreement, and they're definitely it's solved now. There's no issue now with North Korea."
Yeah,
which is bullshit because they didn't sign an agreement to denuclearize, and they definitely aren't denuclearizing. They're definitely continuing to progress with their nuclear capability
and explode,
according
things.
To all intelligence agencies.
Yeah,
and all various, 17 probably.
Yeah, all 17 and other ones that measure seismic shocks. Yes.
Yeah. Oh God.
And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about.
After 35 days of partial shutdown, soon after we recorded the last episode, Trump called a press conference in the Rose Garden to admit he'd lost. Okay, he didn't actually say that. Instead, he talked for 15 minutes about the importance of walls and the drawbacks of duct tape over mouths. But it was all just a long way of saying, I lost, Nancy won, she made me come out here and tell you I'm the worst deal maker in the world. Trump got precisely $0 out of the $5 billion he demanded for the wall and accepted the exact deal the Democrats offered a whole month earlier, negotiations in return for reopening the government.
Continuing to confirm that Trump gets his immigration crisis information from on-demand TV and really can't tell the difference between the movies and real life, the Twitter account @AltUSCIS identified film clips from Sicario, Day of the Soldado, the sequel to Denis Villeneuve's critically acclaimed 2015 thriller. They correspond with Trump's wall justification rants on the January the 8th, or as we know it, 4 minutes 30 seconds into the movie, Trump claimed that a rancher had discovered prayer rugs left by illegal immigrants. On the 24th of January, or 25 minutes into the movie, he reported seeing his favourite Home Depot-based image again of women abducted with duct tape over their mouths. If we could just get him a subscription to the Disney Channel on demand, his border crisis might feature the 4 My Little Ponies of the Apocalypse instead, which, come to think of it, would be much more credible.
Yeah, he also said in a meeting that the press were attending that how much faster the coyotes' cars were than anything the Border Patrol had.
Right.
Which was again, clearly out of Sicario. It's like Fast and the Furious, basically. But they've got these amazing cars. They're better than anything we've got. Yeah,
well, that's like the British government saying, yeah, all the bad guys, they've got Jaguars.
Yeah,
Jaguar got
where's it? Come out,
out of the top, and they fire at us, and you know we really need some more funding because all we've got are BMWs with no roofs on. Yeah, it's just, what.
We learned about Trump's executive time a few months ago now. That's the euphemism for watching Fox News and tweeting that appears on the president's daily schedule. But last week, a White House staffer leaked months' worth of official schedules to Axios, which revealed that since the midterms, over 60% of Trump's working day is executive time. Sarah Huckabee Sanders defended this by saying the lack of structure allows for a more creative environment. I mean, you have to admit, he is creative. Yeah. Some of the crap he comes out with must take hours to come up with.
60% of his day. Since Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez reminded people that the top tax bracket in this country used to be as high as 70% for decades, during which time there was still economic growth and rich people, even Fox News' own polls found 70% of respondents supported raising taxes on annual income over 10 million. 65% were for raising taxes on those making over 1 million per year. In their efforts to find an explanation for why so many people are turned off by unfettered, unregulated and unaccountable capitalism, Charles Payne of Fox Business offered, by way of explanation, schools have brainwashed kids with lessons about fairness. What next? The self-evident truth that all men are created equal? Goddamn commies!
Now that the shutdown is over, people have been doing their tax returns, and a lot of people are finding that their tax refund might be a bit smaller than usual this year, with some even owing the IRS for the first time that they can remember. That's because Trump had his acting IRS commissioner reduce the amount of withholdings that they were taking from pay packets during the year so that everyone felt like they were paying less tax before the midterms, which they were. But that means smaller tax refunds, which is finally causing some Trump voters to rethink their allegiance. Colluding with Russia and putting kids in cages didn't do it, but a couple of grand less in the bank and suddenly they're seeing the light.
Yeah, well, Al Pacino got done for tax avoidance. Not Al Pacino.
Al
Capone. No, Al Capone got done for tax avoidance.
I'm pretty sure Al Pacino doesn't listen to this, but
I don't think anyone denied it. Chairman of House Intelligence Committee Adam Schiff oversaw a vote on Wednesday, 6th of February, to send dozens of witness interview transcripts from its Russia investigation to Special Counsel Robert Mueller. Schiff said House investigators would broaden the scope of the Russia probe by looking into whether Trump boys' associates have sought to influence US government policy in service of foreign interests and whether any foreign actor has sought to compromise or holds leverage, financial or otherwise, over Donald Trump, his family, business or associates. Trump whined about Schiff, unfairly singling him out. No other politician has to go through that. It's called presidential harassment. That's not a thing, Donald. Wishing to be governed by non-traitorous, law-abiding, tax-paying, trustworthy citizens is a thing.
After Virginia Democratic Governor Ralph Northam said that thing about babies on the radio, someone dug up an old yearbook of his that had a picture of one person in a KKK costume alongside another in blackface. At first, Ralph apologised and admitted he was one of the people in the photo. Republicans immediately demanded he resign because racism, and much to their horror, Democrats joined in. Then Ralph held a bizarre press conference in which he said actually he didn't think he was one of the people in the photo, although he did once black up to dress as Michael Jackson and moonwalk. A reporter asked if he could still moonwalk, and if his wife hadn't stopped him, he totally would have had a go right there.
Yes.
As of this recording, Northam still hasn't resigned. And now his lieutenant governor, Justin Fairfax, has been accused of sexual assault. Democrats were embarrassingly quiet for a couple of days about Fairfax, but as more details emerged, many are calling for an investigation. Should both resign, the governorship would pass to Attorney General Mark Herring, but he's also admitted to blacking up in college. So the next in line is the Speaker of the House of Delegates, who is a Republican.
It's been Republican political strategy since the mid-1970s to suppress the votes of the classes of voters to which conservatism declines to appeal, with the added benefit of rolling back those pesky, hard-won civil rights movement achievements, an episode in history that republicanism considers an aberration to the natural order of things. So when the Democrats propose to make federal election days national holidays so that, hey, you know, maybe people wouldn't have to worry about being late for work or taking time off to be able to vote, Mitch McConnell, of course, declared that such a humane, sharing, caring act of equality could only mean an attempted power grab. Is it me, or is that weird, sweaty, wide top lip of his starting to make him look like P.W. Botha, the supporter of South African apartheid, an opponent of majority rule?
So that's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this episode. The show notes for this episode are on our brand new website at fallacioustrump.com/FT19. And if you hear Trump say something stupid and want to ask if it's a fallacy, our contact details are on the contact page.
If you think we've used a fallacy ourselves, let us know. And if you've had a good time, please give us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get the podcasts. And you can support the show on our Patreon page at patreon.com/ftrump, just like our newest patron, Richard Hopkins. Yay, thank you, Richard. Fantastic.
And if you enjoyed our interview with Marsh from the Merseyside Skeptics last week, patrons got an extended version of that interview. You can also connect with us and other listeners on the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/fallacioustrump, where we'll post some links to some of the stuff we talked about.
All music is by The Outbursts and was used with permission. So until next time on Fallacious Trump, we'll leave the last word to the Donald.
That's right. Go home to mommy. Bye. Bye.